you get this combination of players together, you need to have success, because we all know how it goes in the NFL. The whole thing is set up to take away from the best and add to the ones that need improvement. And personnel-wise, I think we have one of the best.
Minus Three with Dave Dameshek.
Well, that's that. That's that for Big Ben Roethlisberger, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and a handful of other pro football teams now into the abyss with all the teams that got out the week before. Hi and hello and welcome to Minus Three, presented as always by FanDuel. Bet along with us, FanDuel.com/minus three. The word minus, the number three. Follow along at Minus Three Pod. Play against everybody at the Extra Points Network. ExtraPoints.com/arcade is how you do that. Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass over there. Our pal from CBS Sports, the Pick Six podcast and beyond, the great Will Brinson, about to try and make sense of what we just saw in a less than super and kind of wild weekend. We still have one more game upcoming on Monday night. We'll give you our picks for that one in just a second. Some great matchups coming up. Bengals +3 at the Titans, a great stylistic matchup. 49ers, Packers getting it on. Niners +4.5 heading up into Lambeau. I think that's a tougher matchup. I still got the Packers in that one, of course, but I think the Packers much would have preferred to see one of those sun-baked Sunbelt teams, Rams or Cards, heading their way rather than the rugged Niners. The Chiefs, the Bills, the juiciest divisional round matchup, or among the juiciest that I can recall in many moons. Allen v. Mahomes in the quarterback league. That's about as good as it gets. Meantime, sky's falling in Dallas. I wouldn't be surprised, Eddie Spaghetti, if you have to interrupt me before we stop recording here to announce that Mike McCarthy's been shown the door. I don't know if I see the wisdom in that. Football America, though, rallying around the bad officiating. Ugly stuff, throwing stuff at referees or any other human being. Grow up, people. Stop throwing stuff at people. But I think I don't know that there's a better image from the weekend for all the superhuman feats that we saw out there from quarterbacks and beyond than a referee running up the backside, inserting himself into a play and literally impacting the final play of a playoff game like we saw down there in Big D. I would be vexed if I were a Cowboys fan, but not just about that, of course. That was a desperate moment there. They were already behind the eight ball. And among these teams, I think it's a funny new energy that I'm catching when a team season ends. Jim Irsay, if you saw him out on the outside his private jet the other day, and Jair surrounded by microphones after the game on Sunday, this sky is falling. I agree with Jerry. That team was ripe. That Cowboys team needed to make a run. The way they were built up, I don't know where they go from there. Before we get to Brinson, very quickly, Spaghetti, where do you come down on these teams that just now are out of the playoffs? Eagles fans feel like at best are on the fence about Jalen Hurts. Steelers fans wringing their hands. What are we going to do now at quarterback after 2-3 years worth of bellyaching about, we got to get rid of this quarterback. They're kind of in the abyss a little bit there. Whose situation do you think is in fact the worst, and whose is the best going into 2022 free agency and beyond? Because everybody feels like the sky is falling right now if you just lost.
The best probably still is Dallas, because they still have.
Oh, you think so, huh?
Well, okay. I mean, look at the division is still miserable. I mean, yeah, the Giants are making strides by finally, for once, looking outside their organization to make some hires, and I think they will be improving. I think the Eagles kind of reached their ceiling with Jalen Hurts. That's kind of the vibe I get. I mean, look at their schedule. They didn't beat a single good team the entire. They didn't beat a single playoff team the entire year. Only beat up on the sub 500 teams, basically got to the playoffs again in a year of the week division as a wild card. I think that's pretty much the limit you're going to see with Jalen Hurts. So I think because you still have Dak, you're still going to have the receivers. You're still going to have Dalton Schultz, who's going to be great. He's a great tight end. Obviously you have the running attack. Like, yeah, the O-line isn't as good as it used to be. The defense gave up a ton of yards but they still have guys who can make plays and turn the get the ball back. So I still think they're the best scenario. There's no reason that they won't be back next year. Now, I'm not going to pick them to win a Super Bowl. Sorry, Sal, and the rest of our EP Cowboys fans. I don't trust them, but I think I can't see a scenario where they don't win at least 10 games. So I think they're the best scenario.
I mean, how you come off of a season that, you know, they might soar next year and, you know, be fueled by it. You hear coaches do that after the thing, like, we're going to use this and it's going to make us better. But it generally causes you to crumble, not get stronger. But maybe they will. I don't know what happens with that. It just feels like, boy, they really let one go. They didn't even win a playoff game. As many big moments, good moments as this 2021 Cowboys team had, got to be a real gut punch to you. I hear you on the Eagles, and I caution that team about being prisoners of the moment, feeling like, hey, what are we talking about? We made a play. We got to the playoffs. No one thought we could. I don't know that Jalen Hurts / Gardner Minshew, or in fact, I do know that there's a ceiling on how far that team goes. I think they would do well to bring another quarterback into the mix there. I like the way the Steelers set up it going to answer my own question.
I didn't pick them just because of their division. Whereas like it's,
that's a tough spot. You're right about that.
It's equal across the board where, I mean, I guess going forward, we're going to give the Bengals a slight edge over the other teams, but I'm still not going to be shocked if the Ravens make the playoffs next year. I'm not going to be shocked if the Browns retool a bit because they have a pretty solid roster and make the playoffs next year. And the same goes for the Steelers as well, where I do like a lot of their pieces. If they get the right quarterback, they should be okay. But I still feel like the Cowboys are the cream of the crop in that division. And I don't foresee them losing any major pieces, and they should only be getting better by adding either pieces to the O-line, adding pieces to the defense. So I think the Cowboys are kind of here to stay.
Well, Raiders are in a tough spot too because of the division they're in, the quarterbacks that are around them. We'll talk about them with Brinson a little bit, but I think the Patriots are in a weird spot too now. Everything felt right. It felt like Belichick, he did it again. He solved. He's going to break through with all these fancy QBs, and he's going to steal the show anyway. Now, all of a sudden, the way they're structured, it's a little weird. Like, the Jets and Dolphins are interesting teams with some of the pieces they have, but you can tell now the Bills are for real. So it's interesting to see now, because they are pot committed financially to this structure, to that kind of an offense. They're not suddenly going to become explosive next year. So I wonder if Belichick now is it's an interesting place to find yourself in if you're there, like that you're going to be competitive in the next couple of years with the Bills. I mean, I know they were one game off and they just about did it, but all of a sudden I'd be a little spooked if I were a Patriots fan about how far you can go with the Bills in front of you in the division.
I'm not as worried about the Patriots. I mean, I know they lost, but they should have lost because the Bills are the better team and Josh Allen is the better quarterback. But they figure out the most important piece, which is replacing Tom Brady, and they got Mac Jones, a guy in his rookie year who took the team, you know, way above expectation.
Yeah.
And I feel like you look at the Patriots roster. I mean, yeah, Damian Harris, and he has had some really good games, his best games actually versus Buffalo. But there's like no stars on the offensive side of the ball. Like they have Mac Jones doing, like they just have a weird stable running backs. They got rid of Sony Michel. You can make the argument that Hunter Henry, an often injured tight end, is their best, you know, weapon. They have guys like, you know, Kendrick Bourne and Aguilar. Like it's not a good crop of receivers. They could always add. So I think if they add a couple pieces on offense, the O-line is actually pretty good. Defense is okay. I think they'll be okay going forward, but I'm not too worried about them. Like once you check off the major box of figuring out who your quarterback is, you're okay. Whereas like,
well, that's the thing to me is do you have like, it's like the Iron Man suit to talk your language, the Marvel universe. Iron Man suit is super cool, but if you don't put that energy battery thing that he puts in the middle, then it doesn't go anywhere. And I wonder if to me, that's why I'd rather have that empty and have a chance to try and put that back. Once you're committed to a guy, now they're in with Mac Jones. I don't know. It doesn't. I was going to make the example.
Look at the Eagles. Whereas, like, if you don't have the quarterback position figured out, I don't think Jalen Hurts will be their guy going forward. I think, or if he is, it'll be a scenario where it's like Hurts plus whoever, if it's a, you know, a Mariota, someone of that ilk where they're going to put on the roster with them to kind of boost him. Like the problem is you're trying to figure out a quarterback. It takes time to find the right guy. And then by then you lose other pieces of your roster, either due to age, injury, free agency, trades, whatever. Whereas like I like with the Patriots, they really have a pretty solid foundation. They finally got their quarterback. And, you know, by all accounts, Mac Jones is only going to improve year after year. And I think they're going to be in the mix at least. Whereas like the Eagles, I'm not going to be shocked if they, especially with how they play this year versus good teams and Hurts only beat up on the bad teams. And if he's not the guy, and you know they have a lot of aging guys in that roster too. I would not be shocked if they're near the bottom of the NFC.
No, I know. I'm overreacting. I guess I'm skeptical. Yeah, Mac Jones, how much higher he can ascend here? But I guess he can, because I guess we pivot off of how much he physically and otherwise resembles Brady, the way he plays. But of course, that's the mystery of Brady, is like, how is that the human being that is the greatest in the history of people at playing pro football? It just doesn't make sense. And yet he rolls on. We'll talk about that and the rest with Will Brinson here. Meantime, Lakers, a train wreck, Kevin Durant out for a month at least. Hockey heating up now on the on this side of the calendar. We're nearing the All-Star game in both sports there. And before we get to Brinson, let's talk about the very last game of Wild Card Weekend here, Eddie Spaghetti. I don't love it philosophically, playing a Monday night game, short week and all that, but still FanDuel gives me reason to celebrate it. And, you know, ultimately I'm happy because it's more football, don't you see? All customers can get a $100 bonus on same game parlays, LA, Arizona. You get a bonus whether you win or lose. You hear what I said? The more you bet, the more you're going to get. Rams and Cardinals. Let's pick a few legs here, Spaghetti. Show people how it's done with the same game parlay. One of the very best things about FanDuel, along with the fast payouts, and it's easy to use and everything else. But you cobble these together, it gives you even more interest in the big game here. Make sure you're betting it at FanDuel.com/-3, the word minus the number 3. Three legs here, Eddie Spaghetti. How say you? How's this one going to go in SoFi Stadium? You're going to be there, right?
I somehow scored cheap tickets. I hope it's not an indictment on Rams fans who don't want to go to this game. I have fingers crossed. I think this is going to be the best game or one of the best games of the weekend. Hopefully refs not involved. But to give the three legs, in our picks, I love Arizona +3.5. So I would take them, get the field goal on the hook. I actually like the over in this game too, 49.5. I could see both teams scoring in upper 20s in this game. I think it'd be more of a shootout than a defensive one. James Conner's gonna play, it seems like he's active. I do have him on mine and Jen's fantasy playoff league team here. He's +130 to be anytime touchdown scorer. He had about 14 touchdowns in the regular season. He was a guy no one really talked about. Awesome fantasy season. If they're inside the red zone, James Conner's going to get the ball, especially if he's healthy. So I really like him to score a touchdown. I mean, they have him +2 to score two touchdowns is +700. Again, it would not be shocked that James Conner runs two balls in from like the 5-yard line. So I really like Conner in this game.
That's a good call. And Kyler should, you would think, you know, just you see the absence of safeties for the Rams, but no new Hopkins. So I don't know exactly if Kyler's going to feast in this one. Stafford's in a big spot, obviously, sort of his the perception of him boils down to this game, and that how he responds to that spot is everything, of course. And I'm fascinated to see what he does. I think he goes, as they say, security blanket here. I like Cooper Kupp over receiving yards here because I think nine's going to look to lean on him quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked by that. I think he's going to target him a ton in this game. But like I said, a lot of points. I think betting the over is a smart wave here.
Good call. I like that. All right, do that. Make sure you get in on that. And of course, like we say, FanDuel.com/-3 is how you do it. And let's get into it. Let's eulogize Ben Roethlisberger. I am in a celebratory mood where that's concerned. I'm not down in the dumps like Cousin Sal about the Cowboys. He had high hopes there. I had very low expectations. My season was already made week 18. Can't take that one away. That was a great few weeks there as Roethlisberger went out. Now I'm excited to see who replaces him in that black and gold jersey buzzes. It's going to be Mason Rudolph or maybe Dwayne Haskins. I am going to stand by what I've said all along. I don't think the Steelers, no matter what Mike Tomlin has or hasn't said to Jay Glazer about it, I don't think they're going to go get some big ticket free agent. I think they're going to try to do it in the draft. That's how they started the last 18 years, was by drafting Roethlisberger, surrounding him with a couple of vets. Roethlisberger got in there early. I suspect that will be the case. Keep your eye on Malik Willis. I think Kenny Pickett would be more fun, but I don't think he's going to be there at 20 unless Colbert moves up to get him. I don't think he's going to be there. Keep your eye on the kid out of Liberty. You heard it here first. And now, with that being said, let's review the entire week in a wild card action with Will Brinson after this break. All right, here he is, everybody. One of our very favorites, and I mean it when I say that. I mean, I say that about everybody, but when it comes to this fella, it happens to be true conveniently here because he's listening to me as I speak right now. He's a senior NFL writer, the host of the Pick Six podcast, a must listen and a must follow on Twitter. And I mean it when I say this, too. Maybe this is hyperbole. I'm not going to say the number one best football follow on social media, but up there. And I don't know why this guy doesn't have millions of follows.
You've told me that before.
I have told you that personally, but that's because I was just trying to curry favor with you. But for real, and if maybe you weren't aware of him, I have a hunch maybe you became aware of him on Saturday because he sort of captured the ethos of football fans watching the Bengals and Raiders whistle, non-whistle business here. It's our pal, Will Brinson. Oh, you know what? Well, okay, let's start there. Hello, Will. How are you? How was your not exactly super kind of wild, but you know, more kind of weird rather than wild. Anyway, how was your weekend?
I think weekend was good. The football was okay. Mm-hmm. I think that it's an aperitif, if you will, for what could be a really good divisional round.
Exactly.
That features a ton. Like Jimmy G is the absolute floor quarterback in the divisional round, coming out of the divisional round, you know, because you have Kyler and Stafford, who will be, you know, one of the guys in there. And then like the next worst quarterback is Ryan Tannehill. You know, if you just, you know, just a very quick back of napkin or back of the paper, you know, rankings. Like, I mean, there's going to be some good football in the divisional round. So I think, and I don't, I mean, Shaq, I don't, I mean, you know, I prefer the 16 playoff, but I'm fine with the 17 playoff. You want to give me more football, I'll take more football. I will say that I don't know if I like the whinging and the whining and the moaning about having to watch a 7 seed, because you know you don't have to watch it. Like you don't maybe if you do it for a living, and maybe it's just Twitter who's doing this, but like if you work for a living in football, maybe you have to watch it. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you have to watch it, is it the worst thing in the world? I mean, what are we doing?
No, indeed. Listen, it's the plague. If conspiracy theories are not undoing society, then it is the vapid cynicism. Everybody is a narcissist. Everybody has to take to social media to let you know how they feel let down or they're cross or to, yeah, but what about all that kind of crap?
I'm guilty. I am not. My feed is not always optimistic, but I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, I can't believe I have to watch this Steelers-Chiefs game tonight. Or like, what are we doing with this? It even was happening, I think, during the Cowboys and 49ers game for a minute. And then that turned into an epic calamity of entertainment.
As I'm complaining, the meta quality of what's going on in my head right now is I'm like, everybody has to complain about something. And what I'm doing is complaining about people complaining. But for me, it really hit home. It peaked for me in one of the Twin Cities at the Super Bowl, whatever that was, 4 or 5 years ago, when people had to, oh my God, you're at the Super Bowl, the pinnacle of American sports, the Super Bowl. And people were belly aching about like, it's really cold out here in Minnesota. Like, oh, I wish I were you back in the studio in LA or wherever. Like, shut up. No one wants to hear. You're living the dream. No one wants to hear you're belly aching about this. But yes, we had to suffer through some mediocre football in Super Wildcard Weekend. And by the way, welcome to the party, everybody. I enjoyed watching my team get a seventh seed improbably. It was an all-time, never can take away, magical, hysterical week 18 culmination of the regular season that benefited my team. So I delighted in that. But this is what you get, everybody. When you don't have a postseason that supports merit, season-long merit, this is what you get. And this is the same people who want an expanded college football playoff are belly aching now about, like, where's the quality of the game? This is what happens. When you let mediocrity in, this is what you're going to see.
Correct. Yeah, that is absolutely right. And you're going to have the people who say, who are like, it's unfair to the little guy, and it's the same teams over and over again to the college football playoff. And as soon as they expand, it's going to be like, why is Alabama playing Cincinnati? What's the point? Like, they're, you know, it's, you're just not going to be happy. You're just not happy. That's
right. Well, that's the big takeaway there. But we did rally as a nation around, and I want to talk about the fun parts of this. Yeah. I don't want to talk about this, you did seize on, you sort of grappled in real time on your social media feed with what was going down, what was right and what was wrong about the Bengals and Raiders mess with that whistle. But that, I don't even know that the big takeaway, it has nothing to do or very little to do with Josh Allen's all-time performance and what Patrick Mahomes did when he hit the gas against Pittsburgh, and all those great storylines sort of fall away compared to the Twin Towers of embarrassment, which is, one, a whistle that ultimately didn't matter, so the officials didn't have authority there. But then, is there a greater image, a symbolic image of a referee inserting himself into pro football action than him running over the back of Dak Prescott at the end of the game there?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually interesting when you think about the weekend like that, is it was bookended. And now I know we have Monday Night Football, but it was bookended by, I'm going to be a purist for a minute and pretend it was just, it ends on Sunday night. But, you know, the first game was the Jerome Boger disaster referee situation. And honestly, I mean, I joked about this, but it's possible that the NFL is like, all right, let's put Boger on first. And then every other game, even, you know, like, any game that was like poorly officiated, you're like, well, at least it wasn't the Bengals Raiders game. But yeah, I mean, that was a hot mess. That I don't mind complaining about. I guess people get mad about me when I complain about the refs, but I mean, you know, you have a $14 billion industry, and you can't say it as, loudly in the walls of, in the halls of, I guess now it's the stadium, but, you know, NFL media. But I mean, you know, you have this $14 billion industry. Get the calls right. Like, and Shaq, I mean, the other thing I don't get is, we saw it in the Bengals Raiders game. There were back-to-back play calls, back-to-back plays run by the Raiders. One is an incomplete pass, ruled incomplete, overturned by this thing called replay assist that the NFL instituted in the middle of the season without telling anybody.
Which, by the way, I have called for years. I'm glad it's here, but again, obviously, it's pretty inconsistent. So it's a little unsatisfying. Why is this this invisible eye in the sky not weighing in on that one? And are weighing in, right?
And they don't tell us when it happens. Right. Like Mike Tirico is like, yeah, that was a replay assist. It's like, whoa, thanks, Mike. But I mean, why is it the official should be announcing it, or the NFL? You know, it needs to be a signal, like I don't know, it's like a something like wave your arms around, let us know replay assist is happening. But so there's I think it was a Darren Waller, but I could be wrong. Derek Carr throws a Darren Waller. It's ruled incomplete on the field. Before the Raiders run their next play, the Jerome Boger pops on and goes, the ruling on the field is a completed pass. And it's like, what? You rolled it incomplete. And so the NFL got in their ears. On the very next play, there's a pass from Derek Carr to Hunter Renfrow on the left side of the field, and Renfrow catches it, it's really close. Like, it's a bang, bang play, two steps, ball's knocked out by maybe it was Jesse Bates, I can't remember, Bengals defender.
Yeah, that's right.
And the ball comes flying down, and they're like, and the refs are like, completed pass. And so I as a Bengals backer in this spot, I love the Bengals this week. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, Zach Taylor, who I think is a good coach, but I'm still a little unsure about. I think he's better than we thought, but I still don't totally trust him. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh my God, he thinks that replay assist is going to jump in here, and he's not going to throw that challenge flag. at the last second as the Raiders are sprinting up to run a play because they know that it's an incomplete pass, he lobs it out there. So on one play, he has to use, or the NFL steps in and takes care of business. And on the very next play, the NFL stands back like idly and like, well, Zach, what do you want to do? It's just unfair to the players. It's unfair to the coaches. It's unfair to the fans because we've gotten back to the situation where you don't know what the NFL is going to, you don't know when the Wizard of Oz is going to come flying down.
The bottom line is it just is unsatisfying, and it's a bummer that this is what we're sitting here talking about right now. But I mean, it's so vexing, and it impacts pretty much every game, multiple times every game. So what else are we supposed to talk about?
You're a student of the game. Like you follow this game closely. And I mean, I feel like I do too, but did I miss an announcement from the NFL that this was going to be a thing?
No, obviously no, but I'm fine with that. But of course, again, our conspiratorial ways make it so that the league, if they did that, people would be skeptical of who's making those calls and who is this person. And I think that has something to do with why the league likes the so-called on-field control of these octogenarians running around in their silly costumes when every other person watching the game knows the correct call, knows that they're wrong, and the upside down quality of that the only person who is getting the call wrong is the only person who's actually making the call. Mm. And so, of course, you should be able to wire down coolly, objectively, distant from the influence of booing or cheering fans surrounding you, tens of thousands and all of that. You should be able to just wire down like, no, you got that one wrong, Jerry. Just flip that call around and then move on. The other part of it is the stop down of the game. That they have to take 17 minutes to do something, whether they get it right or wrong, is besides. I mean, you see it in 11 seconds. If you're watching it on TV, you're like, no, that's wrong. That was obviously he dropped that ball. That wasn't a catch. Yeah. Move along, and it should take that amount of time. And you could let's get you, me, and I don't know. I'll let you decide, or maybe we could do a fan poll to decide who's third. But we'll just sit there like three wise people sitting in chairs, distant from the live action. We'll just sit there and we'll just wire in. Like, do we agree that that was a fumble? Like, okay, yeah.
We'll go gladiator on it. We'll go up or yeah, right. Just yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, just, right, right.
You have a green button and a red button. And it's like, smash the button and then that's the vote. I agree with you. I think it is the actual implementation of this in it. Like it should have happened a long time ago and it makes total sense because again, that incomplete pass where you're like, oh man, that was close. You know, the Raiders going to challenge that? Cause it was on, I think it was on a first down or maybe it was either first or second down. And you're like, I don't know if you challenge that. Cause you really only pick up like 6 yards and you need to keep your challenges. Like, the NFL, the referees screwed that up.
But in a way, I feel like if you're looking for the silver lining or silver and black lining, even though it went against your team there, Raiders fans, sorry, is that I think you kind of got it right, that they got it right. That it would have been, if they were rigid about like, well, a whistle's a whistle and the play is dead, that would have been worse. If they would have canceled a touchdown when the whistle was the ball's out of Joe Burrow's hands, it's a 1/10 of a second away from Tyler Boyd's hands. Yeah. If you say like, well, the ball's dead in the air because the whistle blew, that would have been way worse, right?
It taking away the touchdown from Joe Burrow, from the Bengals. So like this is how I looked at it. The letter of the law, the hard, strict from 1933 when two hand passes and goal, you know, we're flying through goalposts that were at the front of the end zone. You know, this is when this stuff was written. The letter of the law states that when a whistle is blown, the play is dead, everything stops and you cannot review it. So the Raiders were hosed by the letter of the law, but the spirit of the game, which matters more to me than the letter of the law, the Bengals would have been completely hosed had the NFL said, I'm sorry, somebody slipped and accidentally blew their whistle. And so it's like this octogenarian from 5 feet away couldn't tell that Joe Burrow's foot was clearly in bounds, blew his whistle, and you know, it's like, we're sorry. That would have been the real crime, is if you take the six away from the Bengals.
That's right.
And I didn't really buy into the idea. I mean, I've referenced it, and Ryan Wilson on our podcast got mad at me for even bringing it up. He's like, "What do you know about it?" I was like, "No, I'm just saying this is what people said." Like, I didn't really think the Raiders stopped trying that hard. Maybe they eased up a bit on the whistle, but
it's ridiculous. That's one thing that people have held up is like, yeah, but the Raiders stopped down. They did? No, they didn't.
That's just the Raiders defense. That's just how the Raiders defense operates. Like, they're not very good.
They didn't get further away from Tyler Boyd in a tenth of a second. I think their momentum was carrying them in that direction. I don't think they would have closed the gap.
Even if Morig eased up a little bit, I guess you and then you're judging physical intent, like physical and mental intent. Even if he eased up a little bit, he's still two or three feet away from Tyler Boyd. It's not like the whistle froze him. It's not like this isn't Squid Game and red light, green light. You know, he didn't immediately just pause and stop. And Tyler Boyd's like, ha ha ha, we got him again with the whistle. I mean, he wasn't covering him very well.
All right, we're moving on from this because this isn't fun talk. I like to talk about the fun parts of the games that await us, the fun stuff that we saw this weekend and all that. But I can't help it. I have to say, first of all, the most corporate button-down sports enterprise out there is our league. And yet they love to shift into this mom-and-pop shop mentality where the referees are like, yeah, it's part of the game, you know? Yeah. Human error. Like, this isn't supposed to be part of human error. You know, there are strict guidelines that the teams must play by. There are strict rules in place, you see, and penalties with very specific yardage associated with them if you violate them and everything else. It's like, but the carrying of water by the broadcasters and by the fans incented to support the call because it benefited their team, yes, is why this doesn't change really. But that sort of like, hey, they're, you know, Boger's team, you got to say, like, they've had a good quarter. They had a rough first half, but but they say that unironically. The broadcasters say that into the microphone. It's like, that's not supposed to be variable. That's supposed to be also consistent, and it's imminently available to us for it to be 100% correct. You know,
the phrase human error is not a blanket statement for multiple mistakes made over the course of a 15-minute span. Human error is like you are doing a lengthy calculation, mathematical calculation, and you accidentally carry one number extra. And you're like, there's where the human error comes in. It's not Jerome Boger screws up 15 times in a span of a quarter or a half or whatever it is. I mean, that's not a human error. That's incompetence, Dave. I mean, like, why, you know, it's unfair. And they're like, well, you know, just part of the game. No, it doesn't have to be. And I don't know what the answer is, but it's
all right. Let's talk about the actual football and part of it.
Can I ask you a question about the Bengals Raiders game?
You may.
On a scale of 1 to 10, as a devoted and passionate Steelers fan, mm-hmm, what is your fear level with Joe Burrow?
I don't buy that as much as most people do. That, get ready. I'm getting a lot of that from Bengals fans, Queen City denizens weighing in to let me know, like, enjoy the past, bro. You got Joe Burrow to deal with. Yeah, that's true. And I say this ad nauseum, but and yet I don't have the specifics as my weird brain works, doesn't capture full information. But I can tell you. The essence of it is that not only is it good to have a franchise QB, but the sweet spot is the franchise QB on his rookie deal. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Bengals are right now. This shouldn't be a brief little 15 minutes for the Bengals. They should be good for the next, you know, 3 years or so, unless they bungle it up. They really, because they're going to be able to add to that roster with the real deal there at quarterback. And I'm with everybody and have been for the last few months, at least, I guess. My doubt around the Bengals in 2021 was about Burrow's knee. How quickly is he going to come back from that? But, you know, I wish I could have foreseen what was coming here with Cincinnati. But yeah, they're awesome. And as we jump into it, as we kind of like look back at what happened with the Raiders here and then look ahead to the Titans, I know everybody's going to get swept up, and rightly so, in an all-time duel between Allen and Mahomes, the way it presents, at least on paper.
Sure.
But I think
CBS. On CBS. Yeah. I contractually obligated to it.
Nicely done. I think the stylistic matchup between Derrick Henry's Titans versus this Bengals team is just marvelous stuff. I can't wait for both of these games. But yeah, I mean, Burrow, I think, is people get weird about that because people are curmudgeonly, and so they want to be they want the velvet rope. They want to control the velvet rope of the fancy club and be restrictive about who they allow in. And so people are reluctant to do it with Joe Burrow and with this Bengals team until they do it. But I mean, the Bengals have done enough in my book. I expect to see them in the title game at this point. I think that they're going to be traveling to Buffalo or Kansas City. And I mean, I like the Titans a lot. I had them as the number one seed. And I think also for all this, because all of us, the fallout is seven seeds, too many, got to get rid of them. I think the fairness of it hit me when they announced it. This isn't 2020 hindsight. It hit me when they announced, like, yeah, we're going to have seven teams and only one team gets a bye per conference. That seemed, and I'm all in favor, like I say, of a meritocracy and giving an advantage to teams that earn it, but only one.
Yeah.
Like if you're in a, but that's why I had the Titans getting the number one seed in August, is because they were in the worst division.
You had Titans preseason number one seed.
Yeah. Plus 1700. Yeah.
Very nice.
I think that, but it's because of they're not a better team. They just were in a better division. And so I think division titles should matter and they should rule the day. And even if you go 7-9 based on the structure, I'm kind of fine with that. But I think this is the thing that's going to injure what you want. If you want the seven team playoffs to go away, what you need to have happen is the Titans to run the table here. Cause that nothing will hurt the league and the network partners as much as the Titans getting to the Super Bowl when you have Mahomes and Allen watching at home. That'll be like, wait, what? Because then the sense of merit goes out the window. Like, wait, why did that team get to go to the Super Bowl? Why are they?
I'll tell you what else goes out the window is a bunch of NBC executives when they see that the Titans are matched up against the, like, what's the worst possible matchup here for the
Cardinals?
Oh my God. Titans, Cardinals. And they're like, just fast forward to the Summer Olympics, guys.
I know people don't like this. Titans fans will get hurt feelings or whatever. Please don't. What can I tell you? I like doing that thing of like, what's the worst matchup we could see? And I don't care what the ratings are they don't mean anything to me about how
uniforms do matter. However,
uniforms do matter. And by the way, we saw four really good uniform matchups this weekend. But I don't care what the ratings are, but I care what my eyeballs, what awaits my eyeballs. And so worst possible matchups, the ceiling's pretty high up there. You know, I don't think to your point, had the Eagles won, that would be bad. I would have loved the Steelers because their ongoing knuckleball being thrown at 21st century pro football is hysterical and delights me how much it upsets everybody else.
Well, also Ben walking away and somehow trying to get out of football and just keeps having to play games every week and is suddenly in the Super Bowl. That would be kind of fun. I mean, I think that story would play really well if the Steelers had made a run. I mean, it wasn't going to happen with the stacked, you know, the Patriots as their team was this year, just in, they were very ground oriented, similar to 2000. I mean, like, they would have been a good story. I think the worst one is Titans Cardinals, and it's not. And I like the Titans.
It's not that bad. Yeah, that'd be interesting. It'd be a weird couple of weeks, but still kind of fun. Yeah, that's not terrible.
It's a very high floor. For worse, we should get a really good Super Bowl this year.
So, all right, I guess let's eulogize these Raiders very quickly. I, you know, my big takeaway, as it has been, is the performance of Derek Carr under, you know, some of the most adverse circumstances that you could drop a guy into, with his head coach getting shoved out the door and then tragedy and then all that kind of stuff. So good for the Raiders. I wonder what do you think? I guess the big question is, as they head off here, is Derek Carr, well, also the head coach, do you think Bisaccia gets the gig? Do you think they go Jim Harbaugh, which is the rumor that's been out there now for a couple of months? And do you think Derek Carr is under center? How say you?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I am, I know that you are, you know, buddies with David Carr. I have not been a Derek Carr enthusiast for an extreme amount of time. I would say that my opinion of Derek Carr has shifted. Like he's changed as a player in the last year and a half, 2 years. And I also like him, his hair grown out a little bit. I find him.
And he turned into like a boozy country singer too. Like, well, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
We went out there, we battled, everybody counted us out. Like, hey, hey, David Carr, when did your little brother,
he was like a bassist in 311. And then now all of a sudden I just don't think, you know, we'd go out there and try hard. Man, this team just cares about each other. We love each other. You know, we tractors and women and stuff. I mean, let's get it done.
I just realized he somehow transformed into Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born. I don't know who the homage, I guess, like he was, like Bradley Cooper was doing an homage to Sam Elliott, his older brother, in that movie. Maybe this is supposed to be an homage to like Kenny Stabler, but of course, maybe Derek doesn't know it, but the snake had more of a high pitch, kind of went more high register like that. But right. But nevertheless, I've enjoyed the performance by Derek Carr. A lot to keep you warm. As I say, go ahead.
I think he depends on the coach, but because there's either Bisaccia coming back, and I don't think Bisaccia coming back would be that crazy at all. I mean, now we do have this long, you know, I say that I feel like he potentially earned it. But I also am not a fan of giving the job, the full-time job, to the interim guy who rallied the troops for one big run, because a lot of times that can be sort of a false hope. Motivational, you know, to everybody, just, you know, and like you said, the coach resigned amid a decade old, you know, racist email scandal. And then the number one receiver, killed someone in a car wreck in like the span of 3 weeks. It is unprecedented in terms of what that team went through. They came out of that, won two games, you know, the energy sort of faded away. They lose these games and then they just ripped off a bunch of wins to close out the season. And so it's almost like, It was less technical and skill based, and because you have great football acumen and lots of talent on the roster, it was more like just sort of a, you know, like Rudy, or like, you know, like not, I mean, not like a darker Rudy or something like that.
I think you got it exactly right. I think I think that it would be a mistake to be a prisoner of the moment and say, yes, Bisaccia should definitely be back. And it's a snobby thing to say, but there is some reason why that guy wasn't a head coach. He's like, this guy's a football lifer. He's all about ball all the time. Rich Bisaccia has captured the respect of his peers and his players for as long as he's been around. It's like, well, then he should have been a head coach if that was his destiny. I'm completely with you. And the thing, like, boy, the locker room will not be happy if Bisaccia is not the guy. They'll get over it. They really will get over it in the coming months. There will be a different enthusiasm. Let's say it is a celebrity type coach like Harbaugh. They'll get excited and that'll be that. I will be interested to see if Derek Carr, if they don't understand that they have the bird in hand there in Vegas, and let Derek Carr go and try to reboot the whole thing. But like I say, Derek Carr has played himself into, you know, not probably a super long contract, but probably one that pays out pretty good over these next coming. You know, everybody, the thing with Russell Wilson's availability, his apparent availability, is that he's been assigned to like 7 or 8 different pro football teams now. So only one, I'm pretty sure, is going to get his services. I don't think it's like a Kyrie kind of thing where like he could play some home games in one place and maybe somewhere else. You know, I get the Russell Wilson to Saints thing makes all the sense in the world, except that they just don't have what it'd take to give back to Seattle for it to make any sense. I don't know. I highly doubt Seattle's like, yeah, Taysom Hill. Okay, we can make that work.
Two mid first round picks and Taysom Hill. Yeah, sir. Send them back.
But I don't know that they have those ass. I think you have to want that. And by the way, the thing I keep saying now is I think the Baker Mayfield thing, I think that they would like to get out from under that Andrew Berry and Stefanski and everything else. But, you know, 2020 hindsight, but also kind of in the moment, you could see that it was a catch 22 for Bake and for the Browns that they had to play this guy, but they would have been better now in 2020 hindsight to let Bake sit it out, because I think he would feel like if you didn't want him to be your starter in 2022, he'd be trade bait, that you could say, we'll give you a first or we'll give you a couple and we'll send Baker. So the void at quarterback is filled. Seattle, see, you get the first overall pick in Baker Mayfield. He just needs a fresh start. So do you. Let's make that happen. I think that there's a sell there. But anyway, I think Derek Carr down there in New Orleans is kind of an intriguing fit there. I don't know that those two brains, Peyton and Carr, go together, but I could see worse situations than that. Maybe Jameis will come back, but we're going into the void.
Well, I would just say quickly that I don't, I think with the Raiders that it will be either a splash hire that Mark Davis talks, he's like, oh, I can get Harbaugh. It was sort of like you're trying to run it back like with Gruden, and he gets Harbaugh, and then he's like, Harbaugh, do whatever you want. And I would bet that Harbaugh does 1 year with Derek Carr just to sort of see what he's got. But I mean, who knows? And then if it's not a splashy hire, I think they stick with the status quo, because that seems easier and cheaper for the Raiders to do. Bisaccia, Derek Carr, run it back. So I think Carr's there, and then it just depends on the coach. I don't think that Sean Payton would want Derek Carr buying the house next to him. That's the only problem.
Touche. All right. So the Bengals now, and again, some snappy uniforms. It's just some subtle changes, really. To the untrained eye, you might not even have really noticed them, but just a little bit less has meant so much more to my eyeballs. Thank you for making that change, Bengals. Black and orange remains the best color scheme out there, and we will see it in Nashville, Tennessee, this coming weekend. Speaking of which, the Bills annihilated the Patriots. And like Orbach at the end of Dirty Dancing, as you know, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, and I was wildly wrong about this. I went back and forth. I started out on the Bills, and then it started to hit home for me of the gravity for the, you know, Belichick dominated Bills and rest of AFC East, and the stakes that they just all came to the fore right there in Western New York. This is, if the Bills don't vanquish this Patriots team, I don't know where they go from them. And by the way, as we were talking just before we got going, this is a new thing, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. But when your season ends, if you're Jerry's Cowboys or Jim Irsay's Colts or whatever, when you end, like, has it always felt like that someone has died or something like this? Like the way they talk, it is like border. If you didn't know what they were talking about, you would think that some massive human tragedy has taken place. The way they talk about, like, we will get this right, we will bounce back, you have everyone on board, all that rhetoric, and it feels so cheap and empty too at the end. But it feels so devastating to hear these guys talk in that way. But I feel like I don't know where the Bills would have gone from here had the Patriots come in there and handed it to them, because this team is supposed to make its run right now. This is where the Buffalo Bills are supposed to be peaking. And boy, did they. I mean, really, what an all-time performance. I saw Pete Schrager, I saw Bert Breer, and now you and I are going to talk about this. Where does that one rank for you? You've been watching pro football a long time. Where does that Josh Allen, given the stakes and the team that they were playing and the big spot, that Josh Allen did what he did on Saturday?
I mean, it's up there, man. Just in terms of total domination. Like, we thought that Josh, and that's the thing about Josh Allen, is he is, I mean, he's morphed into an elite quarterback. There's no question about that. And anybody, did you see that bizarre Michael Holly commentary on CSN New England? He was on there with Tom Curran and somebody else. And he's like, this Bills team just isn't good. I'm sorry. This is after the game. He's like, this Bills team just isn't good. And he's like, they haven't beat anybody. The only playoff teams they beat were the Chiefs and the Patriots twice. Like, and Tom Curran, who I love Tom, correctly, he's like, because listen, I got to hold your feet to the fire a little bit on this one. I don't think you're right. And I need you to just confirm to me that you really do think that the Bills are bad. Cause I just saw that game and the Bills are awesome. Josh Allen is awesome. He has a high variance level because he can go out there. Cause he's sort of like Cam Newton with a stronger, more accurate arm at this point. And he's fast.
I told you, Brinson, I told you this, I got it right. And I'm sure I'll pass 3-4 years ago. I said, if Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger had a baby,
that's
it would be Josh Allen. That's exactly who he is. Right.
That's exactly right. And he can with like Mahomes' arm, you know, I mean, it's like a stronger Ben Roethlisberger somehow. But when you get a perfect game from Josh Allen, it's just like with Mahomes, it is borderline unstoppable, Shaq. I mean, you can't, because he can make those mistakes that cause the Bills to be in a bad spot or, you know, cough the ball up, et cetera, et cetera. But when he's playing a perfect game, he is really, really difficult to beat because he's so physical. He can make throws from different platforms. He can, you know, you can't tackle him. He can run the short yardage. He can break off big runs. He can throw it down the field. And they built this team around him. This is the thing that goes under the radar for me with the Bills and why their window is so strong right now. They did the opposite of what the Jets and most teams like to do. They built up an offensive line, and then they drafted a quarterback and dropped him in there and let him develop in this ecosystem. And then they added pieces to that as he continued to grow. Whereas the Jets are like, oh, well, we got Sam Darnold. Go figure it out, kid. Our work's done here, you know? And like the Bills cultivated this, this ecosystem is the, for lack of a, you know, just use it again. But I mean, like, it dropped Josh Allen in there and allowed him to develop and gave him, you know, I mean, you get Stephon Diggs, you get, you know, Dawson Knox. They drafted really well and coached really well. But yeah, I mean, this, if there's a, I can't remember who said this, but it's very true. If there's a quarterback who could be capable of just ripping off four like legendary performances, you know, in the vein of a Flacco or a, you know, Eli, Big Ben, you know, we've seen like a Hall of Fame level performance, you know, it's Josh Allen is definitely one of them.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, that's why it's fun. It's in the quarterback league and people, I think to their own detriment, people way smarter than me. I love to argue with people like the name that always comes to mind is Mina Kimes, because she is the great defender of pointing at me and people like me who say QB wins should be a statistic. Like, I mean, what more do you need to see? Look at the playoffs. Look who keeps winning these games. Of course, it's a quarterback league. And if you have a really good one, it improves your chances of winning and making deep playoff runs. I don't know what we're even talking about, but
I think there's like with everything, there's a little nuance to it. For instance,
of course, but yeah, it's pretty obvious, pretty clear. We're trying to work around what is obvious. We talk our way by providing those exceptions and the nuance, but the through line remains a fact. You must get that guy. It doesn't have to be the first overall pick in the draft. There are different ways to get Russell Wilson, Brady. I don't know if you've heard that when they were drafted,
my point is like with Big Ben, with Russell Wilson, with Tom Brady, with Josh Allen, when you're talking about an elite quarterback, then their wins count. Like, you know what I mean? Like they are the ones taking their teams to wins. But like I saw this, this is a hilarious stat. Playoff wins in the last 25 seasons. Jake Delhomme, 5. Trent Dilfer, 5. Mark Sanchez, 4. Brad Johnson, 4. Colin Kaepernick, 4. Dallas Cowboys, 3. Which is, I mean, the point being is that sometimes there are cases where the quarterback didn't win the game, but
sure.
By and large, most of the games in the NFL are won by quarterbacks who are good. Like the franchises who win a bunch of games have good quarterbacks. So there is definitely a correlation there.
Of course, that's true. We tie ourselves in the knots to because you can point to Flacco, Brad Johnson, and Nick Foles-y kind of run there. But those are the exceptions that prove the rule. But where Josh Allen is concerned, he's a better runner than Patrick Mahomes. But there is that weird figured out a glitch in the video game quality too when they take off with the ball. I mean, you know, Allen has designed runs going for him, which we prescribed to the Bills before and after that first Patriots game that they lost when the Patriots threw the ball three times. They said, you just got to cut Josh Allen loose. Long-term, that's a bad idea, as you see. That, I mean, if you want your quarterback to play into his 40s, at least, it's a bad idea. You know, you see what Cam Newton's become, where Ben Roethlisberger wound down a little bit more quickly than, I mean, not that much more quickly, though, really. Only Tom Brady. Tom Brady's the exception. Peyton Manning and Drew Brees faded away in their late 30s, same as Roethlisberger. But anyway, point is, those guys, that's the factor. And Joe Burrow also has it, that if you turn your back on any of the three of them, they burn you. And that's that's why this matchup is going to be so much fun coming up in this one. And I do, like I say, the stakes, who they were playing is a big thing. Other guys have put up big postseason performances, big crazy statistics, but who Allen was playing, man, that was an all-time nails performance. And I would put it up there with the performance of 2019 Patrick Mahomes, because in his own way, they, in two straight games, fell way behind. Yep. And that home field disadvantage started to permeate its way down onto the sidelines. Like, oh, all this magical season, it's all going to go up in dust. Mm. And they did that 2 weeks in a row. That happened to them too. Again, now we're down three touchdowns. And he just rallied them, throws no picks, throws, you know, three or five touchdowns and overthrew. That was an all-time iconic performance by Mahomes. And now you have Allen on the way there. Juicy stuff coming up there.
I don't know who to pick in that game.
Chiefs are given 2.5 last I looked. Is that still true, Eddie Spaghetti?
That is correct. Yeah. 2.5 in the over under 54.5. That is the 2.5 is a little stinky.
I do, you know, listen, both teams have a pass rush. It is really a tough game. It's going to be handsome to look at too. That's, I mean, I have to say it again, but it's
gorgeous uniform combination.
It really, really is very nice.
It'll be the evening game on CBS on Sunday night, and you're 6:30 PM starts will be dark and Arrowhead. You know, we'll have the lots of breath coming up off the field, a little steam from the cold in Kansas City.
See, look at you. See now you're getting into the aesthetics of it, and that's what I enjoy. But that's an off-season conversation we can have. We do have to settle the hash of ripping the domes off of all these. I can't get into it, why people want domes on stadiums, because it provides pristine play. Did you not enjoy the belly aching about the Patriots at Bills game when they threw it three times? Like, you'll remember that one forever.
Yeah.
The imperfections are what make it. The Pittsburgh Steelers of 2021 will forever resonate in my brain because they were a knuckleball team. The imperfections are what make it gorgeous painting.
I attended the NC State Notre Dame game in Raleigh when the hurricane came through. And Deshaun Kaiser, it was like the final score was like 7-3. We were all staying there in the stands. And I mean, like literally in the middle of a hurricane, and it became like a tropical storm or whatever, but you couldn't turn left because the wind was blowing, you had to like lean to the right and yell backwards if you wanted to talk to the person to your left. And of course that was, a sloppy, ugly, horrendous game. I'll never forget it as long as I live. Like, it was an incredible game. The same thing with the Bills Patriots. Like, and it was our good friend Mina Kimes too, who said that she has this take that like they need to put a dome in Buffalo to unlock Josh Allen. Well, I think he may have proved you wrong, Mina.
No, indeed. She's wildly wrong. And
Buffalo has to remain undomed. I cannot handle a Buffalo Bills playing in a dome. That's disgusting.
I know. In fact, I want natural turf in there, and I want it yesterday. I mean, you have now the whole offseason to do this. Well, like, wait, if they win, they could host the Bengals. Right. It could go that way. So it maybe wait a couple weeks, but then it's got to be natural grass or shame the devil. All right, so we can debate Bills Chiefs right now, but we don't have to. I just think that it was the takeaway from Arrowhead. Let's dig in on that one a little bit. I thought that it went the way it went. There were a lot of smart people, again, media types weighing in. Like, boy, it's 21-7 at the half, And the only reason it's that close is because the Steelers got two turnovers and TJ Watt ran it in. Like, yeah, that was the formula for success. And by the way, they need at least two more in the second half. That was always
maybe four.
The only way they would win that game is if they did exactly that, but did it for 60 minutes. They needed it to be a knuckleball. And to the credit of Mahomes, he didn't really what I said to Sal and Spaghetti and everybody else was this past week in the run-up to the game was what the spot the Steelers need to get the Chiefs in is mid-second quarter, and it's like 10-7-ish, and like, what the hell's going on? We annihilated this same team 3 weeks ago. What's going on? So they get spooked, and they think, what's going on here? This is a different game.
Disadvantage, as you said earlier.
Right. Yes. Right. And he hit the gas and ran away with it. But I will say, and you know, it's hard to pick apart a game that was 42-21 with late touchdowns from Pittsburgh that actually made it look better than what it was. But I do think that the little stuff, what feels little if you're watching Patrick Mahomes, like, Pringle dropped that one. Like, all right, back in the huddle. He'll throw a 35-yard deep ball here down the seam to Kelsey and everything will be right on the next play. But when you are a nickel and dime offense like the Steelers, you just can't afford 4-yard drops that would have gone for a first down hung onto the ball there. So it's easy to be sort of like shrug your shoulders and be like, what, the Deontay Johnson drop is the whole key to the game, dude? It's like, it's not the key to the game, but I don't know. At 14-7, Deontay Johnson drops a third down ball that then keeps the Steelers with the ball. And even if they run three more plays and then punt it, they likely get to the locker room at 14-7, and then the game feels different. The Steelers come out for the second half. They're within a touchdown. Let's stop them one time and get the ball, and now there's a chance there. But it was off the rails as soon as it got to 21-7, and that was imminently clear. You knew they couldn't do that. And I will say one more thing about all the people saying, you know, I obviously 18 years I've enjoyed watching Roethlisberger immensely, but – the thing in the second half of like, see, once he starts drawing up the plays himself and ignores Matt Canada in his ear and just does what he wants to do, you see how much better is also the Chiefs stopped blitzing. The Chiefs took their foot off the gas defensively and stopped heating up Roethlisberger on every play and just sat back and didn't want to get smoked on one play. So the Canada has to go stuff, maybe he does, but I'm talking to the Steelers fans for whom the sky is falling right now. I'm optimistic. I like this spot going into this. It's going to be fun to see what they do at quarterback. Fingers crossed as a Pittsburgh sports fan. I'm hoping for Kenny Pickett. Mm. And I do have to say very quickly, before we just talk about a couple more things, since I've held you way too long as usual.
No, you're fine.
Kenny Pickett and that Pittsburgh Panthers performance this season was grand. We talked to you midseason about, you know, the Wolfpack and Panthers were tracking towards an ACC title game. Pat ourselves on the back. You and I both got it right. We both took our teams to go over their season win total. They did it with the greatest of ease. So kudos to us. But when we're talking about wins and awards and everything else, I do have to address some ugliness that I thought you were a gentleman and you didn't jump in on it in social media, but as I'm sure you know, Nick Kostos, your pal, our pal, campaign. I thought it was ugly, but that's how political campaigns go sometimes. You know, you have to get down there in the mud. He came on -3 and campaigned for the best non-football playing guest of the year.
I did see something about this, and I meant to dive in and I forgot. So let me just
try that again. Don't say that. Don't say you didn't care. Say like you meant to dive in, care. But you forgot.
I did.
Don't
care.
Do it's that. Just, it's because just that maybe Eddie Spaghetti was right in his judgment. Kostos came on, and he said,
"You have a Shecky." When you are in possession of a Shecky, you don't lower yourself to the when you already have this award, you're a winner of this award. It's beneath me to dive in with Nick Kostos, this Johnny come lately Yankee, you know, Yankee fan who thinks
his haircut, right? Yeah,
with the shaved sides and the blue light glasses and the hot gambling takes. He thinks he can come in here and talk down to me and make a bunch of rabble rouse his way into an award instead of creating, like, cultivating good content and making good conversation. Please, Costas.
In a way, it's an homage to you. You know, Patriots fans were feeling sad on Saturday night, but I really did feel like, isn't this a tip of the cap that they're letting out two decades worth of frustrations on you tonight? That they're just that they just want to put it all on you right now. It's kind of honoring what you've done to them for so long. I hear you, but Costos did get ugly when he said, "I deserve the award. Find the campaign, but I'm not coming back on the show ever again if it goes to Brinson." I thought that was unnecessary, but it worked on Eddie Spaghetti. It was a jury of one. Eddie Spaghetti, do you want to apologize to Brinson? Will's been a lot of fun over the years with us, and I don't like his Canes affection, his occasional support of the Canes when they're rolling. And you know what? Look at the three of us. We have our individual interests as this second half of the NHL heats up here. I think the Caps are going to go away, and I think they're going to fade slightly. And I think it's going to come down to the three of us. And I think we should make peace now before division invariably comes back to us.
Dave, there's no need to make peace. First of all, there's still a game on later tonight, and there was a wild card weekend full of football, and you're wasting Will's time this morning talking about a Shecky Award. It's absolutely insane. I brought up Will by name, I brought up Mina by name, I brought up a lot of great guests we had. I said time and time again, Nick came on three times. He beat everyone in appearances, and you keep every guest for a minimum of 90 minutes. So he spent 5 hours on this podcast talking sports to you, going back to you. And I said, yeah, there's a little bias. He's from the same area as me. We root for the same team.
Giants fans.
But three appearances. So it's simple as that.
You know what I admire there is the candor from Spaghetti. He just announced it. You know, he just pulled back the curtain. He said it out loud.
Let me tell you something. Nick Costas didn't win best guest. He won Spaghetti's favorite guest. That's the award that he won. He won best Giants, best fellow Giants fan with podcast producer Spaghetti's to come on. And I would bet that there is some social media stuff at play here, because Nick has been a vocal anti-Jason Garrett, anti-Freddie Kitchens, anti-Dave Gettleman, anti-that slap Joe Judge. What is he doing up in here? I would guess that all of these rants against the Giants swayed Eddie in the favor of Nick. And probably not helping matters is the fact that whenever I come on, I'm just like, Saquon Barkley sucks, and you shouldn't have drafted him.
I finally did drink the cool. I mean, Nick was a very loud voice in that, but I what really got me was the Giants just being this like old boys club where just like, yeah, we're just going to keep hiring guys from inside. We're not going to look in the outside to bring in people who, like, actual football minds who could change the direction of the organization. Having guys like Chris Mara make of John Mara make decisions, and just like, it's disgusting. And it's like, you know, we already have a bad owner in Dolan with the Knicks and the Rangers, and then Mets. I'm not a Mets fan, but like, the Mets had a miserable different owners like for years. The Wilpons
literally ran
like
a Ponzi scheme.
I'm not sure Hank's a great owner either. Hank Steinbrenner's the best just because his old man.
God. Well, true. But at least the Yankees make the playoffs and make things interesting, whereas the Giants have been incompetent for quite some time since 2016. So that was what really got sickening. They kept doing the same thing over and over and over again, not seeing what the real issue was. But hopefully things are changing. But
you know who I would like to see the Giants. Well, I don't want the Giants to hire him, but I want to see somebody hire this comp. But there's a buzz that Adrian Wilson from NC State, VP of pro personnel with the Cardinals, and actually from my hometown, is a candidate.
Yep.
And there's buzz that if Adrian Wilson is hired, he wants Byron Leftwich, and Byron Leftwich wants to work with Adrian Wilson. I mean, I think a team, you talk about going, it's not outside the box, because it's an up and coming offensive coordinator and an up and coming personnel guy, but they're so recently modern players that it feels a little weird. Like when I told people that Adrian Wilson was interviewing for GM jobs, they're like, you mean like like the guy we
Cardinals?
Yeah, the guy we watched in college? Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, he's like a white hot candidate. I think an organization like the Giants, or you know, whether it's the Giants or Bears or Jaguars or whoever it is that's floundered for a while, try something different. Hire these two guys who
I so agree. Why would you recycle somebody when Byron Leftwich is clearly on the ascent? It makes all the sense in the world to do that. It's weird that I expect that he winds up somewhere sooner rather than later. And that leads us neatly then into this Cowboys Niners thing. And we can talk about here's exactly as we okay. I do want to jump into that, but I can feel it already slipping away from me, which is honoring Tom Brady at 44. That again, this is what we do. We react to the week's events, another year of it. It's exactly what happened last year, that somehow they just kind of like, they're still around and we didn't know. And then like all of a sudden it was like, well, they what ends here in Lambeau, right? Like what? Oh, they're in the suit. Tom Brady's in the Super. Okay, well, the Chiefs will get him. Like, again, is this going to happen again? Are the Buccaneers really going to win the Super Bowl? Are they going to go? Are they capable of doing this, running the table in the NFC?
I mean, yeah. I mean, didn't we?
I guess. Yeah.
Didn't what? Wasn't it you that said this? It's like, you know, we do all the, you know, we spend all this time, you know, yes, debating and hot taking, like, oh, look at this candidate to come in here. And, you know, the Cowboys are on the rise with McCarthy and Dak, the 49ers, a special run game. My goodness, Aaron Rodgers. And at the end, it's just a Marvel movie. And Thanos is there because he's inevitable. And Tom Brady's like, no, I'm sorry, I'm going to win another Super Bowl. Now, And we're definitely going to be like, oh, if he loses his offensive line, oh, if he loses his receivers, yeah, it might not matter because that defense suddenly looks really good. And Brady is just incredible. Like doing this at his age is wild beyond the imagination. Like if you told somebody in the 1980s or 1990s or even 2000s, hell, even 2010s, you're like, Tom Brady's going to be in 2022, Tom Brady's going to be 44. And the number two seed in the NFC and looking to win back-to-back Super Bowls with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they'd be like, listen, man, you're going to an insane asylum because you're a crazy person.
Because it's without precedent. We're in such uncharted waters and not the drunken ones that that Brady was on after the last Super Bowl. It's impossible. We don't have the words to describe what happens. And it's also because it's embodied by that guy. And I don't mean the underwear picture from when he got drafted, what he is now, what he was 10 years ago and everything else we talk about. I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Those guys are just, you know, straight up better athletes than Tom Brady ever was. And it's Aaron Rodgers too. Somehow it doesn't matter. And Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown's absence doesn't matter. It's just it's hard to make any sense of that this it, that we're tracking, that we're 120 minutes away from this happening once again.
Yeah.
And my special little nook in sports arguing is trying to support underrated Hall of Famers, the oxymoronic underrated Hall of Famers, but you know, Eric Dickerson, I guess we could call it the Eric Dickerson Award because, you know, for all the songs sung about him, he's underappreciated. He's probably the second best running back of the Super Bowl era. Somehow this doesn't make sense. So we don't know what to say about his greatness other than to just shrug and like you say, it's inevitable. But the 49ers now, and I think do a favor for Brady because I mean, the Packers aren't going to say it into a microphone. They wouldn't have said it before the game. They're not going to say it after, but this is a worse matchup. This is a worse draw for them. They definitely want one of those. I know that, you know, pro football players have pointed out to me ad nauseum that, you know, that the guys who play in Chicago and Green Bay and otherwise are all from Florida and California, Texas too, right? Like, I don't know. The reverse is true for, like, I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania where it gets cold a lot. Over the years now, like when it's 63 out, ooh, I need my parka with the hood up kind of thing. That reverse is true. I think you kind of get used to it one way or the other. But I mean, just the way they play the Niners, that bang, that very physical team. I know all teams are physical because it's guys running into each other on purpose. But if Nick Bosa is okay, and that's a big question, that's a tougher draw for the Packers. And so that helps Brady and company.
I think the draw broke really well for Tom Brady, to your point, because he's either now going to I think the perfect, if you're Brady, you want to get the Cardinals and then get the 49ers, because you're getting Kyler Murray in his first ever or second ever playoff game. And then you're getting, you know, San Francisco with Jimmy G, and I don't think Jimmy and a team that needs a run against a good run defense. And if you get that draw, you're going back to the Super Bowl.
They really have a shot now that you lay it out like that, right?
Yeah. Now on the inverse thing, Shaq, is if the Rams can win Monday night, I mean, the Rams took out the Buccaneers earlier this year. I think the Rams can beat the Bucs. It's not going to be easy, of course. I mean, it's Tom Brady, you know, and Todd Bowles was masterful against the Eagles on Sunday afternoon. But if the Rams could beat the Bucs, I think there's a path for the 49ers to get back, because I like the 49ers. I agree. I will be picking the 49ers to beat the Packers. I think they are we saw it in 2019. They beat them 37-8 in the regular season and then 37-20 in the NFC title game. Kyle Shanahan has a good grasp over how to game plan and attack his former assistants. And I think he's like one loss to his old assistants or something like that.
There are so many scenarios that are not completely implausible. I mean, you could wind up with a Niners Rams NFC title game. That's not insane to think that could be the result.
I bet before the playoffs, I bet an 85-1 Niners Bengals Super Bowl.
Oh, I went just on the eve of the playoff kickoff. I went Packers v. Bengals. I like Joe. I don't like him, but you know, I do like him. I just don't like him in.
He was playing for another team. Do you know? Not to go back to Burrow, but do you know what his stats in must win games? So if you count, against Alabama in the regular season, with LSU, because if you lose to Alabama, you're out of the title game, and so you're therefore eliminated. Against Georgia in the championship game. And then the two playoffs, Oklahoma and then Clemson in the playoffs. And then the two week 16 and week 17. So you got your Chiefs and Ravens games where they had to win to get in the playoffs and to win the division. So it's like, you know, division clinching, et cetera, games. And then against the Raiders, you take all those and combine them. He's 7-0 with 3,150 yards, give or take, 31 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Is he, you know, people keep now, I love ranking QBs and everything else under the sun, and he has ascended very quickly. He's in most people's top five all of a sudden among all pro football quarterbacks. But is Burrow, I guess, like this side of Brady, the least likely to poop the bed? Lowest poop the bed percentage of all the Mahomes, Allen, everybody. Like one thing that is going to take the Bengals down is not Joe Burrow, moment being too big, or him like, oh wow, he threw three picks there. He's just got a little tight.
He's not scared of them. He's just a big game guy.
Yeah.
I think he's just a big game guy, and it's Joe Cool. You know, it's like some shades of Montana where just find a way to win. Packers and the 49ers. I just think it's a bad matchup for Green Bay. Now, don't get me wrong. Aaron Rodgers can beat Jimmy Garoppolo in Lambeau Field with a bye. I mean, that's very, very conceivable. And the health of Nick Bosa and Fred Warner are probably key here, too. But I like the Niners, especially catching five.
What fun. I love as the sky falls on all these teams that just lost out and into the abyss that now we'll start deciding who the new quarterback should be. Russell Wilson will be assigned, like I say, to half the league. In the meantime, we appreciate you, Will Brinson. Make sure you're checking him out. You can hear why the last hour where we bent his ear and he taught us the air in our ways. The great Will Brinson, pick six, one of the best in the business. Follow him on social media yesterday. Thanks, Will.
And apologies for having to bounce Shaq. It is always
you had my vote for the Shaq Award, but it was out of my hands. It was not me.
It's very clear. I don't even call them shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what.
It's like, I'm trying to think what the...
Needed to send it up to the booth. If somebody would have thrown a red challenge flag, it may have turned out differently, but now we'll never know.
Let's just say that there are some people who voted for Tom Brady for MVP because they wouldn't vote for Aaron Rodgers.
Brinson got Bogard. I think that's basically what happened. I will be filing a complaint
with the committee. Unfortunately, it seems like the committee is probably just spaghetti.
I'm sad that we didn't talk about how different things might have wound up had Phil Rivers landed in New Orleans. But anyway, we'll do that at another time. I wanted to see that happen almost as much as you.
Let's do it again soon, man.
There he goes, everybody. Good times with our guy Brinson. Final takeaways. What did you think of what Will had to say there, Spaghetti?
It was good, but I'm not going to talk about NFL. I want to bring up the game he brought up that he was at, the NC State Notre Dame game. And I vividly remember that game because Brian Kelly, for some reason, was calling like shotgun passes in a literal hurricane in North Carolina. And he blamed, I forgot who the center was at the time, but he blamed the center for a poor game. And I remember that was like how I root for this team with this guy as a head coach that's blaming the center.
I love Eddie Spaghetti, he's Brian Kelly. The next he's just gonna bring
so
up
ridiculous.
Like, we would have been better if that guy hadn't have been around, as it turns out. that's funny. I mean the takeaway from these teams now, when you lose a game, it feels more catastrophic than it has ever before. Like the way these owners are talking into microphones and everything, it's crazy stuff. People don't seem to recognize how quick turnarounds happen. I mean, look at the Bengals as a for instance. Get a break here and there in the draft or free agency, and all of a sudden your fortunes can get turned around very fast. And Russell Wilson's going to be out there, and Derek Carr may be out there, and we'll see with Aaron Rodgers. But we still have what, 4, 6, 7 more games. That's it, Spaghetti. Only 7 more pro football games, and then we really turn our attention into basketball, hockey, and all the rest of it. We'll be here for you all the way. Make sure you're listening and following along all the fun on the Extra Points Network, extrapoints.com, the arcade, lots of games to play against us. And make sure you're betting with us, fanduel.com/-3, the word minus the number 3. And we'll be back later in the week to talk to a forlorn Kevin Hench now that his Patriots are out of the playoff picture. Don't worry, though, as Spaghetti and I can attest from our text messages, he's still awfully fired up. So we'll look forward to kibitzing with him soon. And until then, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.